Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. Formula One heads to the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix this weekend. Today was Free Practice 1 and 2. Of course, in Free Practice 2, some of the fuel comes out, and we get to see some of the quicker lap times. You can't always get an overall read of who is quickest, but it was a Max Verstappen clean sweep. In Free Practice 2, on the quick runs, Verstappen posting a 129.603. In second, Alonso in the Aston Martin, a 129.811. And the second Red Bull of Sergio Perez, a 129.902. Joining us on the podcast today to discuss what's going on, today's action, and the big stories from Autosport.com is the editor of our website, Hayden Cobb. Welcome back to the podcast. You doing all right?
Hello. Thanks for having me back again. Yeah, I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, yeah, good. No, we love having you on because we can talk about what happened today, but also what our listeners and readers of the website have been clicking on. So, you know, we can put the agenda together, but ultimately it's our audience that dictate what they find interesting. So it's always good to go through with you the biggest articles on the website. But let's talk a little bit about today's free practice. You and the team, of course, have been covering that for our readers. It was Verstappen, Alonso, Perez, like I mentioned, then Ocon in the Alpine. Then Russell and Gasly, so two Alpines in the top six. Then Stroll in the other Aston Martin. Nico Hülkenberg, and then Leclerc and Sainz. So let's get into it. But first of all, can you tell us about the story we were running earlier this week about why Max Verstappen arrived to the circuit late?
That's right. It was a bit of an odd one to see all 19 drivers apart from the reigning world champion in the paddock on Thursday morning. But it turns out Verstappen had been suffering with a stomach bug. A tummy bug, I think, is the exact phrase Red Bull used to describe it, which is quite a cute way of
putting it. We can read through the lines.
I mean, I think we've all probably been there at some stage in our lives, and it's never fun. And so to get on a long-haul flight from his Monaco home to Saudi Arabia, I think the other passengers that may have been sharing that flight with him would actually be thanking him for not getting on that flight if he wasn't feeling so well. So he missed all of his Thursday activities with the media and usually with his team. But it didn't work out to be too much of a problem for him in the end, because with the late start in Saudi Arabia due to the night race, he basically could catch up with his team Friday morning when he was feeling much better. And yes, as you said about the Friday practice, he topped both sessions, so I don't think he was feeling too unwell given the circumstances.
And if people are watching the highlights, or you know, our listeners end up watching some of today or over the weekend, they'll pick up on some track changes. Now, it changed from 21 to 22. Some people are saying that when we first saw it in 21, this track was downright dangerous with very little runoff area, driving next to the walls, the highest speed street circuit in the world. And because of the fast, sweeping, curvy nature of it, no sight lines. So you could come around the corner and just come across a car. That changed from year one to year two. What's happened as we go back to Saudi Arabia with the track changes?
Yeah, that's right. So it's pretty much more of the same in broad strokes, but predominantly it's moving walls back from certain areas of the track. So turn four, for example, walls been moved back by 7.5 metres, and at turn 20, 5 metres, just to provide a bit more runoff, obviously, and having the walls less so cumbersome. Some of the banking and all the curbs have been changed, partly for either grip levels or sight lines, as you mentioned earlier. All in the name of making the circuit safer. I think it's probably, given because of the high speed nature of the track, it's probably the most dangerous track on the F1 calendar currently. We'll sort of see how Vegas shapes up, in fairness, later this year, because no one really knows what that looks like in reality. It's the combination of that high speed, blind corners, and particularly in practice and what we're seeing qualifying tomorrow, is you have cars going on the sort of slow laps, building up their tyre temperatures, etc., and those already on push laps, which is obviously not what you have on during the race situation. So you have cars going slower that will either be on the racing line, which is generally narrow, or off it, just close to it, with cars coming up behind them. And there was, as has been the case for every year since we've been to Saudi Arabia, there's been countless incidents of drivers, race engineers speaking to them saying, well, watch out for another driver behind you approaching fast, and sometimes the message doesn't come across quickly enough, and you have I have a lot of near misses. Thankfully, we don't think we've ever really had a proper or any sort of incident. There's been plenty of near misses, but no sort of clashes, and certainly there were none today. But you do sort of feel that there's only probably a matter of time before something like that happens. But the other problem is, how do you avoid it? How do you solve it? The only real suggestion that would sort of permanently do it is have a minimum lap time that all drivers must adhere to, and keep that high enough where you don't have those great differences in speed between a car on a sort of qualifying lap and a car on a preparation lap.
Yeah, and I was watching the Formula 2 practice this morning while I was just sort of doing some other jobs. I'm not glued to F2 practice week in, week out. I love motorsport, but you know, I had it on whilst I was also doing some other stuff. But there was a red flag at the end of that. I think from memory it was Cordeel who spun coming out of 13.
Yeah.
A sort of a snap oversteer moment. Spun it, ended up sideways on the track, and of course the yellow flags came out, and I don't know who was coming up just behind, maybe one of the Pramers or something. But quick thinking, but on a different day, that could have easily been... He put his hands up instinctively to the side of his helmet. That could easily have been a T-bone incident. And it wasn't. And the next car was, say, 2 or 3 seconds back and double-waved yellows. But as you say, we have kind of dodged a big accident here. And so I think, look, to me, watching both free practice sessions, I think it still looks quick enough. Like, that circuit looks bonkers fast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, slowing the cars down a bit more runoff, I think, is absolutely fine. As you mentioned, you know, blocking is going to be an issue. And actually, you know, the F2 cars have a little bit less information compared to the F1 drivers that have a constant stream of their race engineer saying, so-and-so is 4 seconds back, so-and-so is 2 seconds back. And so that's different. The F1 cars do have a different level of communication, but still. Let's talk. So Verstappen was top, and I think that was expected, but let's talk about Aston Martin, because that wasn't necessarily expected if these times are representative of their pace. Some saying that the Bahrain podium was track-specific, you know, lots of traction out of low-speed corners, a very, you know, unique track surface, very highly abrasive. What's the news? As Alonso finished second today on the times, how are Aston Martin doing here?
Yeah, I think that the two elements there, you say, sort of the Aston Martin podium in Bahrain being track specific, but also has their pace overall improved. I think it's a combination of both. On Friday practice, or the end of Friday practice in Bahrain, Alonso was top of the timesheets and fastest, but then in qualifying was fifth or sixth, that sort of area, and obviously then came through and beat the Mercedes and the Ferraris on pace to get onto the podium. This is a similar sort of case at the moment, and we sort of, Alonso said immediately after Friday practice, he it's hard to guess, it's very still difficult to know exactly where everyone lines up in the pecking order track to track, but he sort of anticipated potentially a similar sort of story, and I think that's probably a reasonable deduction to make, given on the very limited data set we've got currently with the 2023 cars. But it's definitely worth saying that Aston Martin are in that fight at the front, and yeah, depending on how the track goes, how they're getting those clean laps in when it really matters in Q3, there's absolutely no reason you'd find it impossible to see Alonso in particular, but then Aston Martin on the front row, or definitely on the front two rows, or if things don't quite come together and the other cars like your Ferraris and Mercedes do get it together, then pushes them back to sort of 6th, 7th. So it is very competitive between those teams. And yeah, but I would basically count them in the podium fight, top 5, top 6 fight, regardless of what happens, really.
Oh, that's brilliant. I'd love that pace to be real and that they can develop that car this year. It's great. We might see an Aston Martin on the top step of the podium sometime this year.
Yeah, a win. This is true. It's definite, like, It's early days, and you would, given what we've seen so far, have to sort of see Verstappen really struggle for one reason or another, or have a mechanical or something, and the other Red Bull of Perez. But, you know, that isn't an impossibility. We did see the Mercedes win last year in Brazil pretty much on merit, and that was a car that no one thought we could be able to win a race that year. So given where they are currently, I feel like at some point this year, given how many races there are, there's a very real opportunity that they'll be fighting for wins at some point this year. Maybe not this weekend, but at some point, I would look forward to it.
It doesn't always have to be a mechanical. It might be a reliability issue, but we saw it at this race last year when Perez was leading Leclerc, had a really healthy gap. And in the first round of pit stops, Ferrari were on the radio, or maybe it was the other way around, Leclerc was onto the pit wall saying, okay, let's box to overtake, let's do the undercut, you know, public radio, were they bluffing? And so Red Bull had to bring Perez in this time last year to cover it off. And of course, Leclerc was always going to do whatever Perez didn't do, the opposite. So he stayed out. Red Bull took the early stop. And then what brought out the red flags? Was that a Latifi? I think it might have been a Latifi shunt a lap later.
Testing my memory there. Yeah, something happened.
But something about the red flags this time. And then, so everybody else got what, you know, they say a cheap stop, but everyone is going. It was a full safety car as well.
Yeah.
And that really hurt Perez. He dropped down to fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
Ended up battling and really dropped down. So, you know, Lady Luck can shine on you, and we could see an Aston Martin winning for a variety of reasons this year. On the way, in a moment, we'll talk about four more teams. Won't cover off everybody on the Friday podcast, but Ferrari, Mercedes, Alpine and Williams on the way in a second. Stay there. All right, welcome back. I'm on today with our editor of Autosport.com, Hayden Cobb, and we're talking Ferrari next. And they finished in 9th and 10th in FP2. I mean, that's behind a Ferrari-powered Haas car. Can you tell us about the grid penalty for Leclerc? Last I heard, it was only sort of a speculated grid penalty, but he'd used two parts that they were allowed two of, so almost a dead certainty. Why is it the second event of the year and Leclerc is having a grid penalty?
Yeah, so you're bang on there. He's obviously, when he's had that retirement in Bahrain, that was down to one of the electronics units in the power unit failing, and he'd only changed, or Ferrari rather, had only changed that exact part of his power unit the morning of the Bahrain race because they suspected an issue. Turns out the suspicions were bang on, but unfortunately the new one couldn't have lasted the race distance. So yes, this particular part, control electronics, you're only allowed two units of them for a whole season before you start getting grid penalties, which sounds tight, but from memory I don't think anyone picked up a grid penalty because of not running out of those pieces. They'd only pick up or use a third or a fourth of those in recent seasons if they've already taken on a new turbo or an internal combustion engine. It's sort of like a piece on between because they're taking a penalty anyway. Why not get a new piece, add the and sort of use it in the pool without much pain? Ferrari seems confident that they've rectified the issue that appeared on Leclerc's car, and in fairness, like, it hasn't, at least in the sessions that matter, hit any of their other Ferrari-powered cars, whether it's in the factory team or Haas or Alfa Romeo. Mm. It was just very unlucky that of all the drivers and in all the situations it seemed to hit, it was the worst scenario. But that's sometimes how it goes. But that means, yeah, Leclerc is onto his third control electronics unit of the season and takes a 10-place grid penalty for the second race of the season, which is bonkers, but it's the way it's gone for him, unfortunately. So, yeah, in terms of their pace today, you wouldn't be so surprised, given that Leclerc has the 10-place grid penalty hanging over him going into qualifying tomorrow, focusing more on race pace. Qualifies and the top two, top three shuffle back into the midfield regardless. But in truth, as we said, 9th and 10th, not where you'd expect them to be regardless of that scenario. And they called it sort of good data collecting and sort of playing it down as still as just a data collecting day of trying out different wing specifications and generally trying to find out more about their car. But it's behind where they would be expected to be, and I think they have underperformed, but it is only Friday practice, so we'll see where they line up. But yes, not an encouraging day or encouraging week for Ferrari.
Yeah, some in the paddock saying that Ferrari's power unit has the legs on the Red Bull, and so they're expecting Ferrari to make up places, to qualify better than where they were today, and also Leclerc taking a penalty. But it's at a track where, because it's so high speed and there are two pretty decent overtaking opportunities, especially into the hairpin, they've moved the DRS line, so we won't see any of that. I think it's a shame that they've moved the DRS activation line.
The novelty has gone, yeah.
I know. None of that to you. It was all a bit Chuckle Brothers last year, but that's fine. It was fun seeing Verstappen locking up and nobody wanting to cross that line first. They've moved it to after the apex of the corner, so they've taken our fun away. And so some say actually Ferrari could be in a good position because of their power. A couple of articles that you were running on autosport.com this week, one of them Lewis Hamilton saying that he thinks 1.5 seconds is the difference from Mercedes to Red Bull in race trim, and also a more recent one where a very familiar face in the paddock by his side since 2016 is no longer with him. Can you fill us in on Hamilton and Mercedes news?
Yeah, that's right. So, starting with the departing of ways, it's Angela Cullen, which is his trainer. Those who aren't familiar with the name, you'll certainly know the face. It's the short blonde lady that is in every F1 TV cutaway to the Mercedes garage whenever something happens to Lewis Hamilton. I sound facetious. I'm only just sort of taking the fun of it, but like, yeah, she is a very integral part of Lewis Hamilton's team, as it were, like in terms of, yeah, it's the training, it's the preparation. She has been there and been the right-hand woman to Lewis Hamilton since 2016. That's when they started working together. She's off to do new adventures or new explorations within her own life and her own career, which we yet to find out exactly what that is. But yes, it was a split within the Hamilton camp, as it were. I'm sure some of our colleagues in the media may draw on that a lot more than perhaps is real in terms of camp splits and oh, it's all going wrong for Hamilton. But I think it seemed a fairly amicable way of parting, and Hamilton is experienced enough and knows probably what he needs to do in terms of his own physical preparation, fitness, etc. But it'll be interesting to see if there is going to be a new Angela Cullen. She was very charismatic person in the paddock, and you could not spot her. So yeah, it would be sort of sad to see her not in the Mercedes side of that garage anymore. But
7 years is a long time in Formula One as well, you know, and I say unless you're a highly paid driver, but I'm sure she was, you know, well compensated for the amazing work that she did to raise Lewis's performance. But even so, if you just got other ambitions to do things in, you know, whether it's to do a different line of work or to do anything, you know, the increasing load on an F1 season, and then she has to be probably where Lewis is when he's training at all times, that is probably a job a bit like a PA, actually, where you don't really get an off day, because if someone needs you, they need you.
Exactly.
You
can it's be scheduled huge, on a, on a, it is know, a huge a, huge commitment. So maybe that's also been the factor into it. It's right. But it'll be interesting to see how that sort of adjusts. And then, so go back to the other story that you mentioned.
The performance wise of the car, not Lewis.
It's true. So he's estimated that the Mercedes is currently in race trim 1.5 seconds slower than the Red Bull, which sort of sounds about right given what we've seen in Bahrain and today. But the Mercedes team has had the biggest of almighty meetings and sit downs, a crunch meeting on the Tuesday after Bahrain to discuss what the heck's going on with their car. They have basically admitted that this concept that they and only they have been following since the new regulations came in at the start of 2022 isn't working, to the point of they can't win races or fight for championships with it. So there's been talk from both drivers and team principal Toto Wolff of changing the direction, changing the philosophy. Whether that means a brand new car is probably not the case because of the cost cap, because they could not just throw money at the problem. It's probably a two-part thing of the long-term situation is probably a brand new car for 2024. And then do what they can with their current concepts. And they've talked about a new side pod design and a few other things that will be changed for Imola, which is in mid-May, when the sort of the first big upgrades everyone's expected to deliver will be coming. So, yes, it is. They are where they are. They've been very honest and open about this. They haven't met expectations within themselves. They sort of thought if they could get on top of the porpoising and try and unlock the performance they believe was there in last year's car and this year's car, that they could be fighting for world championships. But they've got to where they are currently with this W14, and did just whether it's the data, whether it's the correlation, it's just not adding up, and it has never added up to what they expected. So some pretty harsh and brutal home truths and honesty has come from the team, and I think they're preparing for a changing of concepts and changing of ways, because it's just not worked.
Wow. I wouldn't be surprised to see a B-spec car sometime around Silverstone this year, as they clearly have said, hey, you know, we tried our best, but this is not the way to go. A team who did, I think, show well. If you look at the actual times, the progress made through the race, ignoring penalties and stuff like that, if you sift through the data, a team who had reason to be happy in Bahrain, you wouldn't think so, is Alpine. Two cars in the top six in free practice today. Any news coming through from them? They were going to bring some upgrades quite regularly. Any news on that? Or is this a sign of the inherent pace in the car? What do you think?
Yeah, so nothing in terms of a significant upgrade for this weekend, which is like by and large the case for most of the teams, because it's so close to the opening race. There's bits and pieces, but nothing too drastic. But you're right. I think it's the real Alpine maybe is showing up this time around. They had, in no uncertain terms, a bit of a shocker in Bahrain. Whereby, Gasly just didn't get qualifying, hooked up, was out in Q1, back row of the grid. Whereas Ocon qualified well, but he had very much a race to forget, picking up penalties like their sweeties. And therefore, he dropped out of the points, and eventually they retired the car, whereas Gasly fought his way up to the points. But Gasly, speaking on Thursday, as you said, they had a look at the data, they looked at where the cars and the traces were going. They thought if they had a clean weekend in Bahrain, they could challenge Mercedes or give them a headache, which instantly puts them sort of, as we know, sixth, seventh place, or maybe just behind them, which, on reflection of where they are at the moment in Saudi, early days of course, is probably where we'd expect them to be going on the practice pace. So, if they can have a clean weekend and extract the full potential of their car, which is pretty much what the team said at the end of the Bahrain Grand Prix, of knowing like, right, this isn't really us, then they probably will be the fourth or fifth quickest car on the grid. Let's wait and see. They've still got to get through qualifying in the race, but if they show their full potential, I think they'll be fighting for the points, definitely.
And finally, a quick word on Williams, actually. I thought I'd pick them out to talk about. Alex Albon finishing just over a second off the pace of Max Verstappen today, and Logan Sargeant ahead of drivers like Oscar Piastri, ahead of Valtteri Bottas. So Williams not bringing up the rear today in free practice. Actually, with Saudi, it's a fast-flowing track. They've said their car could be good on some circuits this year. This should be one of them. Any news coming out of Williams and how this could be a good circuit for them?
That's right, the circuit should suit their car characteristics. Albon, was 14th in FP2, but his fastest lap was set on the mediums, whereas everyone else managed to get their fast lap done on the softs, which is a bit of an anomaly. So you could definitely give him a few tenths in hand to move him up the order, and that puts him just on the edge of the points where he was for Bahrain. And I think you're right. They could, again, if they have a clean weekend and qualify well, there's a chance that Albon in particular can be fighting for that sort of just outside and just the top 10 is sort of where they would be aiming. It is a definite tough ask for rookie Logan Sargeant. He has experience around this track in F2, but obviously this is a different sort of challenge. He didn't do too badly today, and granted his Bahrain debut in F1 was, I think, beat most people's expectations. I think he acquitted himself very, very well. So, yeah, give him a chance, see how he does. I'm always sort of keen to see how he does compared to the other two rookies for this year, which is Piastri and De Vries. They've all got varying experience, let's say, in terms of their junior careers and such. But given where their teams are, they seem to be fairly well matched in terms of how the season will go. So keeping that sort of little battle between those three going, and he's acquitted himself, I think, very well. So yeah, give him a chance. It might be a bit more difficult for, say, Sargeant to fight for the points and match Albon's performances over these first few rounds, but they've got the package to hopefully do something quite exciting this weekend.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much for your rundown of the Friday action. Once again, the big stories on autosport.com, which is where you should be heading to if you are a subscriber to Autosport Plus. A reminder, we have all our wonderful long reads and in-depth articles on the Plus section of the website as well. And it should be your first port of call for the latest breaking news in Formula One and all of motorsport. So that's our wrap up for Friday. JBL, we'll catch you tomorrow actually for the podcast on Saturday. I'll be back with the gang for our post race analysis on Sunday. Catch you then.
Sports Social Podcast Network.